Lynn Helms is here. Lynn, longtime director of the North Dakota Department of Mineral Resources and now in retirement, a regular guest of ours celebrating things like the Lions Club. But he is in studio with us today on the way to see some family down in southwest Minnesota, Redwood Falls. It's good to see you, Lynn. How are you?
Oh, great, Scott. Thanks for having me. It's wonderful to sit down and think about celebrating 75 years of oil production in the state of North Dakota.
So just top of mind consciousness, those 75 years from where it started to where it is. Give us your thoughts on this.
Well, a lot of it has to do with technology, Scott, as you know, and we've talked about this many, many times. Williston Basin's always been a technology basin, and that first discovery came about because Amerada Petroleum figured out how to do two-dimensional seismic, and that allowed them to identify where to drill the Clarence Iverson on the Ness and Anticline. And ever since then, every boom, every surge in production in North Dakota has been based on some type of new technology, whether it was three-dimensional seismic, whether it was natural gas processing, of course, horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing. And so I compare it a lot to the difference between a Model T and the space shuttle. The technology of the drilling rigs prior to the Iverson, where they were using cable tool rigs to drill a well maybe 5,000 foot deep and try to get casing into that well, compared to what they do today using missile guidance technology to direct the drill bit in real time with geologists that can be anywhere in the world watching the information come out of the well and steering that bit up and down through 4 miles of Bakken rock at the bottom of a two-mile-deep well. It's absolutely astounding.
You mentioned the early technology. You know, again, how do we know there was oil there? And then is that there's some cost in getting it. You don't know how much is going to be there, so there's risk involved. But how do we know there was oil there?
So it all started in 1912 when the USGS sent a party out to the fairly new state of North Dakota to survey the state and try to identify, are there marine fossils out here? Is there the potential for oil and natural gas production? And that party, they parked at the base of the Nesson Anticline where the Missouri River cut through it, and they named it after the rancher, Nesson, who gave them a campground to use while they were out here. They identified marine fossils at the mouth of the Cannonball and at the mouth of the White Earth River, and they identified, that would have been, 49 years before or 39 years before the discovery of oil, that this was potentially an oil and gas province because there were marine fossils here. And it all started with those geologists who had a vision for what North Dakota could be.
And now we rely on core samples, right? And explain a core sample, and that tells us a lot about where to pull oil from now. What did they know then, and when was the first core samples that came up that helped that effort 75 years ago?
Sure. So some of those first cores were cut in 1938 in a well drilled by Pan American Oil and Gas, and they drilled west of the Ness and Anticline. They missed the target. They had no idea of what the stratigraphy of the basin was when they were in the Devonian. They thought they were in the Red River rocks, and they had drilled through everything that had potential. By the way, Amerada Hess drilled a well 300 feet away back in the 1980s and struck oil in the Silurian formation. So that's how technology goes. That was really the first core samples of oil and gas producing horizons in North Dakota. Our predecessors had the vision, we should build a core library in Grand Forks where we have a geology department, and let's require that half or two-thirds of every core cut in North Dakota ends up in that library so future geologists can study it and figure out how to produce more oil in the basin. So sitting up there now,
just explain this as a dumb radio guy. If you had your biggest sandwich ever, and the bun on top and the bun on the bottom, and you know the lettuce and the bacon and all the different things you pile onto a sandwich, and look at it from the side, that's essentially what a core sample helps you to do to know where your sweet spot of oil is. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So they put a diamond, almost like a donut cutter, down the hole, and it drills the rock out around it. It pulls up about a 4.5-inch diameter piece of rock, 60 to 90 feet long, and they slice that open and take a look at it. And you're right, it's like looking at a Dagwood sandwich, layer after layer after layer. And you can identify which layers have the potential for the oil and gas production from those core samples.
What percentage of oil discovery was successful way back in North Dakota when it started in 51 compared to when you drill today, the success rate?
So in 1951, using two-dimensional seismic, 1 out of 10 wells found oil, and only about 1 out of 3 was economic or commercial prior to the Clarence Iverson discovery. Along came three-dimensional seismic, and 1 out of 3 found oil. And now it's a whole different world with horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing. The Bakken is more like an oil manufacturing plant. Every well finds the formation, drills in the formation, and produces oil, some more than others. But the risk has gone from 90% of the wells were dry to about 1% is a dry hole today. And so it's completely changed the face of the oil and gas industry in terms of capital investment and infrastructure and how you can plan for decades of production and decades of infrastructure build-out that will provide jobs for people in North Dakota.
Back to 51 and 1 out of 10 being successful, you had a lot of little guys in this game, right? I mean, the entrepreneurs, wildcatters, I think they called them at the time. And that was a risky business, 1 out of 10 working, right?
That was incredibly risky. And they would go out and talk to their friends and bankers and folks and raise the capital to drill a well. And 9 times out of 10, they didn't find any oil or gas. And so it was super high risk. It took companies with the capital background like Amerada Petroleum, they were publicly traded companies that could put together a stock and put together the capital to take that risk. You know, they spud that well in October of 1950, and they did not complete it and start to produce oil until 6 months later. Nowadays, we drill 4 miles of wellbore, 2 down and 2 out, in 9 days.
And it took how long again on the first one?
It took 6 months.
6 months. And how far down?
They only drilled to 11,000 feet in that wellbore, and they found the Silurian producing formation. They had already drilled through the Madison, which turned out to be the big formation of the 50s and 60s, and the Devonian, which turned out to be the big formation in the 70s.
How did oil go to the market in 51?
Well, all the oil had to move by rail, Scott. It went west to Montana refineries. They'd been producing oil since the 30s, and east to Minnesota, where there were refineries near the population centers and the big milling centers. And so that first oil all had to leave by rail. In 1954, of course, Amoco realized that this was a long-term thing, and they built the Mandan refinery and a pipeline from Tioga down to Mandan and from Keene down to Mandan. And so, but initially, everything moved by rail. And of course, we saw that again when the Bakken turned on. We've quickly filled up all the pipelines. And at one point, we were moving between 800 and 900,000 barrels a day by rail out of the state of North Dakota.
I remember those giant rail loading facilities, figure eights all over the Bakken area, northwest North Dakota.
You're right. There were 17 of those built out there in western North Dakota. There's only 3 still active today. And, you know, one of the landmark things for the state was the opening of the Dakota Access Pipeline, because now 750,000 barrels a day leaves the state every single day, safely transported all the way to Nederlands, Texas. It can go anywhere in the world from there. And it's, you know, much, much safer, much more cleaner for the environment. And so it's amazing, that technology.
You used an analogy earlier where you talked about, you know, technology going up in 1951. Think of a Model T. And then obviously today being the spaceship, how do we go from the space shuttle to, I don't know, Mars, whatever would be the next, you know, leap of technology?
So when you look at the space program, of course, they're developing the technology to put a station on the moon and then be able to launch rockets from the moon. And, of course, we just sent a rocket. It's on its way back to Earth now around the moon, traveled further into outer space than humans have ever gone before. So that technology is developing into having bases on the moon and ultimately on the planet Mars. And that takes a whole nother order of magnitude technology. How do you provide water and food and oxygen and a growing population in a habitat like the moon or Mars? And we're headed in the same direction with our shale oil. When you look at what's happening in the world today, Scott, and we'll just digress for a second here, they just closed the Strait of Hormuz. Oil's trading at $95 a barrel. Impossible before the Bakken. Oil would be above $200 a barrel if we hadn't invented how to produce oil from shale here in North Dakota through the work of the oil operators in the Bakken shale.
We removed it as an international weapon, didn't we?
Correct. Yeah. It is no longer a giant economic weapon that threatens the whole world and the entire world economy.
If you had to put into words, again, you gave me an analogy during the break of just how quickly oil comes out, and we're again went from 1 billion barrels a day to 5 billion to 6 billion in a nanosecond. Describe that, 1951 to now.
So in 1951, they started producing oil. It took 18 months for the industry to produce that first 1 million barrels of crude oil total. 1 million in 18 months. Today, starting at midnight, the state of North Dakota produces 1 million barrels by 8 p.m. Every single day, like clockwork, coming out of the ground, moving through our pipeline network to the refineries that supply crude oil around the world. And so it's when you think about the change that has brought about to our nation, you know, started out with maybe 600, 1,000 employees working around Tioga and up and down the Nesnanik line. 60,000 people employed by this industry today. And like I said, 1 million barrels of oil comes out of the ground between midnight and 8 p.m. every single day.